Well, hello, this is David Wilcock, and I'd like to welcome you to another edition of the Divine Cosmos audio blog. Today is Monday, October 20th, 2008, times 8:51 p.m. Pacific time. And what I thought we would do is discuss the intriguing events that have been transpiring in the media in the recent past. As most of you probably already know, my website goes into all manner of paranormal subjects, including UFOs, metaphysics, ancient civilizations, etc. And it does seem that we're arriving at a stage of our history in which many of these things are no longer going to be kept secret, but will be shared out in the open. I understand that more and more people are starting to become aware that they've been lied to. I think when you look at the recent collapse in the markets, it's not hard to figure out that this is something that obviously had built up over a long period of time. You don't have Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG, and essentially the rest of the financial system as we know it suddenly crash all at the same time without there being a lot of buildup and without there being a lot of unspoken sentiment that was trending negative for a long time, where people knew what was going on and they just weren't talking about it. I actually do feel that the holographic equivalent of the 1929 market collapse happened with the dot-com crash. I've spoken before about how you can look at the two graphs between 1929 and 1999 and see that they are very similar. It's around 2000 that the market in the dot-com thing really went down, somewhere in the spring. And when you take that 99 to 2000 graph and look at it there, the mapping out between 1929 and 2000 is so exact that it's really quite astonishing. So a lot of people are waking up to the fact that the elements behind the government are not so trustworthy and dependable as many of us might have hoped for. Those who did have their blinders on and still thought everything was fine and good are having a rude awakening now as they're realizing that the system itself has essentially moved into an unsustainable condition. Our American economy is in such sad shape that we're literally resorting to running the printing presses in order to try to bail ourselves out, because there really is no money to be bailed out with. My history is that I began an intuitive contact with an aspect of myself millions of years more evolved than we are now. This was in 1996. It's called the Higher Self, and I built up to this from a long period of time, starting probably age two, having dreams of UFOs, or what appeared to be UFOs. I didn't know what they were at the time. Age five, having a really important out-of-body experience that showed me that I was more than just a physical body. Age seven, I had longed for the 2 years after it first happened to have another out-of-body experience. I never did. And that plunged me into studying ESP, reading about it, and practicing the exercises. Most kids, of course, would never be into something that young, but I was quite advanced in terms of my reading ability and so forth. So as I progressed, I got more and more involved in the paranormal. I read about palm reading. I had a deck of tarot cards as early as junior high school. That was my mother's deck, and she stopped using it because she was scared of how accurate it was. By the time I was in high school, I did lucid dreaming. In my sophomore year of college, I stopped using any and all intoxicating substances, which means I now have, I guess, 16 years of clean time. And I began writing my dreams down every morning. I really do credit that exercise with what got me to be able to do more advanced psychic work. It did take a long period of time, though. There was basically 4 years between September 1992, when I started writing my dreams down, and November 1996, when I started to listen to the background noise in my mind and take notes on it. This was a technique I called the dream voice. And I learned it from a man named Joe Mason, whose website, greatdreams.com, was where my own writing first appeared. I met him on Richard Hoagland's discussion forum from the website enterprisemission.com. This was all back in 1996. I only got online to the internet for the first time in late 1995. I can still remember seeing these kids in college in the study halls that were sending each other email and thinking that it was really kind of a waste of time. Why would you want to talk to somebody all the way on the other side of the world when you could have friends here on campus? And these people typically were not the most social or popular when they were in their normal lives. Now, of course, everybody's using email and it's not a dorky thing anymore, and it's really cool to be able to talk to people all around the world, so I get that. The point is that shortly after I got sober, I was confronted with knowledge that a friend of mine gave me regarding his physics professor having been in touch with NASA in the highest levels throughout the 1970s. And everyone up at the highest level knew that UFOs were real, that they had crashed here, and that we had been reverse engineering their technology and using it since the late 1940s. This struck me as quite a surprise, but there was enough specific information that I was given, which I've shared many other times, to erase any doubt. And a lot of people are plagued with doubt. They listen to shows like mine, and on some level they want to believe that it's true, but on another level they don't quite make the jump. And that's perfectly understandable. I had already by this point had a keen interest in science fiction, metaphysical subjects. Of course, as I told you, I was learning how to do various forms of divination, such as tarot cards and lucid dreaming, palm readings, etc. In fact, in my senior year of high school, I would give tarot card readings in the senior lounge. And that was a rather ironic and funny thing in context. I also used to carry crystals around in a little baggie in school. So now here we are, and I'm looking at this from the other side, never knowing that when I started to write down the background noise in my mind in 1996, after having learned that UFOs were real and living with that knowledge for a good period of time, that I would end up giving such amazing messages. I really haven't done so much channeling in the recent past. In fact, I feel as if the source has largely blended with my conscious mind. That's an important point. When you're hearing me talk right now, it's not as if my higher self is walled away and I don't have any access to it. I think the objective for any type of enlightenment teaching, such as you might get from Zen Buddhism or other forms along those lines, is to reach a state in which the partitioning of the personality has been lifted, and you don't need to espouse credibility to some other authority outside yourself. Within yourself is the one infinite creator. You have the power of the universe within your own mind. And the more that you become aware of that power, the more you can utilize it and bring it out into a functional capacity for your daily life. This was something that I had not been averse to. My mother got into the Jane Roberts books, the so-called Seth books, from when I was very young. I remember her reading The Nature of Personal Reality, and that was the book that coined the now very common New Age phrase, you create your own reality. Nature of Personal Reality is very repetitive. It keeps making the same point over and over again, but the objective was to try to drill it into our heads because we have a tendency not to see this. We like to think that things that happen to us come from the outside, that the people that come into our lives, if they start hurting us or if something goes wrong, that that's a random event that we didn't have anything to do with. A lot of people, most people, like to indulge in feeling that they are the victim. And I don't mean this in any way to attack anyone, because I used to do the same thing. In some ways, being the victim is an easier road because you get to blame someone else for why you created a problem in your life. And you get to feel angry and direct your anger towards a particular target. Now you look at how 9/11 was managed, whether you believe that it was an inside job or not. I personally do believe that there are elements to 9/11 that we do not know in the public mainstream media by any means. That might start to happen, that we'll learn the truth with the downfall of the Republican Party. It is an important point that I will mention right now in case I forget to get back to it, but I'm sure I will. As of the day after the last debate between McCain and Obama, I got a very definitive dream letting me know that although, of course, anything is possible, it is extremely, extremely unlikely that any matter of fake voting, vote tampering, October surprise, you name it, will be able to sway this election and stop Obama from taking the presidency. More recently, I actually had a dream. Well, this was not a dream. This was a moment of guidance when I was getting up in the morning, where I heard that there would be either a 17% victory margin or a 17-point victory margin in electoral votes. I'm not sure which one it is. And of course, that's also an averaged figure. It could be that it changes between the time that I got it, which was a few days ago, and the election. I'm not trying to game out the system here. I'm just saying that these are things that I'm getting. The probability of the future can be changed, and so when you make prophecy, you always have to include that caveat. Anything can happen. But it's exceedingly unlikely that McCain is going to win at this point. And that's something that we should be relieved for. We've gotten through this month without any major upsets. There's no big nasty things that have happened. We can move forward and be glad that the future is going to open up in ways we've never thought possible. I really do think that Obama's candidacy has changed the timelines in a very fundamental way. I think if there had been business as usual and we didn't have this kind of political event happen, that the American government would have fractured. And what we know of as this country would probably have ceased to exist. And I know I'm speaking to an international audience, and it may seem that the American election isn't really all that important, and people wonder why I talk about it so much. You have to remember, there's two major power groups in the world. I started to learn about this in college around the same time, about 6 to 10 months before I finally stopped using intoxicating substances. I had a class the beginning of my sophomore year. It was in my freshman year, the second semester of my freshman year. And it was called Contemporary Social Issues. Interestingly, CSI was the abbreviation. Now, this class was something you'd only get in a liberal upstate New York university because it was sociology focusing on government conspiracy. So the innocuous-sounding title, Contemporary Social Issues, actually couldn't even begin to do justice to the things they were teaching us in this class. I learned so much, and to have it be paid for as part of my college education, I find really astonishing. So many people are reading about this stuff on the internet, and yet I actually did have this kind of knowledge being imparted to me in an academic setting, which is not something most people would have happen. But the benefit of the college system is that you can have professors teaching you things that are totally outside the mainstream perspective. So our professor had said at the time that you could actually make a lot of money right now in this environment. Of course, this was circa 1992, the beginning of 1992 that I had this class. But there are obviously people that are doing that. The rest of us have continually had a lower and lower status of living. When I was graduating college, all I had was a bachelor's degree in psychology, and I was terrified about what the regular working world was going to be like for me because I really did not have anything to offer an employer. As crazy as that sounds, at least in the state of New York, a bachelor's degree and $2 will get you a cup of coffee in New York City, and that's about it. So we live in a society where there's a whole youth culture that's had to acclimate to the idea of not really having the American dream, not having the kind of financial well-being that is typically present in earlier stages of our society. I think that's one of the reasons why people now accept that music is something they don't have to pay for, and you see so much illegal downloading. Bottom line is, you can't expect people to buy things when they don't have any money. And the youth culture is dealing with all these dead-end jobs and low-paying positions that really don't seem to serve their higher interests. If you can just imagine for a minute what would have happened to our society if some of the extraterrestrial initiatives that we've heard about from these black ops whistleblowers, people that were on the inside and came forward, have told us, it would be a whole new world. If we had, for example, anti-gravity technology, or let's call it gravity shielding, coupling that with free energy, meaning that you have a device that draws energy from the actual etheric background of space and time itself, meaning the energy that gives rise to physical matter, that gives rise to all the known universe. You tap that energy directly, and now you have a limitless resource that eliminates so much of the need for a financial system. Once you have energy on demand and you don't need to use roads, you can just fly from one place to another, you're in a very different situation, obviously. The potential to create wealth is much, much larger. Economics is a science that's largely based on the management of capital. And of course, in order to use capital, which is basically your resources, your natural resources, you have to have energy. So if energy is no longer part of capital, if you have limitless energy, then you've totally tweaked economics. Because now, you're not limited to the earth either. If you need more raw materials for building or whatever, you don't need to be stuck to the earth. If you can create limitless amounts of free energy, you could reforest the deserts. That's another example. You could create water. You could essentially have so much more, and the planet could actually support probably upwards of 70, 80 billion people without any trouble. The reason why we have such a problem right now is because everyone is compressed into cities. And one of the things that you hear about from these insiders is they feel as if the population needs to be reduced and that we would have a great crisis if this didn't happen, where everybody would breed too much. The actual data shows that if you allow a particular society, a particular civilization to develop, to gain access to clean water, to healthy food, and to give them the opportunity to be able to grow, then you get a much, much lower birth rate. In a lot of these developing countries, the birth rate is so high because there's a lot of infant mortality, and the parents have the children in order to ensure their own survival. When you look at civilizations that have since evolved to the level of being fully sustainable and prosperous, the birth rate goes down in many cases to a zero population growth or even a negative population growth, meaning that there's more people dying than there are being born. So I really think we are at the precipice of some major changes in the world. I don't think you're going to be able to hold down the truth of the free energy movement anymore. There are a lot of technologies out there coming online all at the same time involving the splitting of hydrogen using specific resonant frequencies out of water. So you can take ordinary water and resonate it with a particular sound frequency, particular electromagnetic signal, and you release hydrogen, which you can then shoot right into the carburetor of a car or through the spark plugs into the pistons and the chambers of the engine, and actually run the car to a large degree, if not entirely, on water. So we have a lot of these technologies that are coming out, and it will continue to do so. They've been trying to get out for many, many years, going all the way back to Nikola Tesla, who was silenced, of course. And it's been a very effective campaign by the Rockefeller faction of the New World Order, for lack of a better term, that has been able to stop these things. The Rockefeller faction was birthed from the European Illuminati, as they once called themselves, this planetary group that seeks to have domination and control of our resources and of our philosophy as well, a spiritual philosophy. The Rockefellers broke off from the Rothschilds, which didn't start out as a break. It started out as just a cooperation, but the Rothschilds allowed the Rockefellers to develop an oil infrastructure, and they really did not foresee that this oil infrastructure would become such a huge business that it would actually overtake all the things that they'd already been involved in, because they were very confident and cocky in their supremacy and their power. It's not entirely true that the Rockefeller faction had no prior disputes with the Rothschilds. And I need to clarify that. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. You can all trace it back to the actual formation of America itself. America was founded by Freemasons, who essentially were breaking off from the illuminated rulerships in Europe and wanted to start out on their own. And the Declaration of Independence was not something that was seen as a favorable thing. It was actually taken very negatively, hence the Revolutionary War, of course. And there's been an ongoing campaign between old Europe and America to decide who's going to get to control the planet. One of the things that we have going on now is that there are actually two factions other than these Illuminati. The factions would include the Middle Eastern faction, which is Arabic countries, and the Asian Russian faction, which is not Illuminati, and really seems to be more interested in going in a less warring direction. So I really think that we're going to see some big changes with Obama's presidency. Again, I think it's very unlikely that he will not win. It is possible that there could be some sort of prolonged disputing of the vote record. You can already see the McCain campaign trying to gear up for this with all the discussion of the Acorns' alleged vote tamperings going on. But then as of today, the day I'm making this journal entry, you're seeing the news about a top Republican vote coordinating man who has essentially been found guilty of vote tampering and trying to alter the votes in favor of the Republican Party. This is before the elections even started. Probably the biggest thing that has swayed this whole debate is the manifestation of the Palin pick by McCain. I really do think that that was the moment that he lost. He wanted to go in with Joe Lieberman, who would have made him this sort of crossover candidate between both sides of the aisle, the liberals and the Republicans. But the Republican oversight committees basically told McCain that if you do this, you're automatically going to lose the election no matter what. Now, Rove wanted him to go with Romney, but Romney would have been obviously a Mormon and more of the same thing. So McCain, being a maverick, which I don't disagree with that diagnosis of his condition, let's say, because in some ways it is like a disease, what he's done to his campaign, decided that he would take on a virtual unknown. And as of September 1st, 2008, just days after she had been picked, there had been such a furor that had gone up on the internet regarding the idea that she had not had her latest baby. That her latest baby, the baby known as Trig, who has Down syndrome, was her daughter's child. And she was only pretending that it was her own child. This was a huge controversy. It got very popular on the internet so fast that as of September 1st, just days after she had been announced, they already came out and gave a statement saying, "This is it. Her daughter is pregnant." 5 months pregnant, supposedly, and that would have been as of September 1st. So that means that you got to add 4 months to September. So that means by January, she should be delivering the baby. So that would be around the time of an inauguration. Now, this appears to be true. It does seem that Bristol is pregnant. You can see that she's got the stomach that she's showing. It doesn't answer some other questions that people had, including why she was sick from school for such a long time. That would have been about the length of time for her to have carried a pregnancy. It also doesn't address the possibility that she had the baby and then immediately got pregnant again. And that could have been what we're dealing with. The margins are such that if she's not 5 months pregnant, if it's newer than that, that it could have actually been her child anyway. It's possible. However, there are also pictures of Sarah Palin that do seem to show that she had some stomach showing towards the end, but it was only right at the end of her pregnancy. There are other pictures that people have pointed out that made it look like she wasn't pregnant at all. So it's kind of a silly thing, and in fact, I had a dream very recently that was telling me not to in any way go negative on McCain and Palin anymore. We can talk about what's happening, but we don't need to attack them. We don't need to dislike them even, because it's past the point that they can win. I think that's pretty obvious. The endorsement of Colin Powell saying that Obama could make an exceptional president is a very encouraging sign for those who do want to see Obama become president. And I would like to say something else at this point regarding the election and regarding the negative elite in general, because what we're really looking at, in my opinion, is a groundswell of support for someone who is not in the system. I am aware of the fact that many of the people listening to this show are avid consumers of the alternative media. They have been out there, they've been learning about a world that is very different from the one that is presented to them by the mainstream media. Again, I started to learn about this in a college class in 1992. So I've been very much acquainted with this for a long time. And the academic things I was taught are still more advanced than a lot of the stuff you see on the internet. I learned about how the oil companies were protecting themselves from competition by suppressing things like bus transportation, monorail transportation. Anytime that there was an effort made to make it easier for people to get around without having to have their own car, they were shot down. We talked about things like the Ford Motor Company making that decision to refuse to put something into their car, the Pinto, that was intended to compete with Japanese imports. This Pinto could have had a baffle around the gas tank that would have stopped it from exploding when it was rear-ended at a relatively low speed. They decided that the amount of money they would spend on lawsuits would be less than it would cost to put this part in the car and save people's lives. So you can see the kind of decisions that are being made and the utter disdain for human life on behalf of these corporations. So again, we're moving through an awakening process, and many people are starting to wake up. But in the process of starting to wake up, they're learning a little bit about UFOs. They're learning that maybe we're not alone. Maybe there are people from other planets that are coming here, which is absolutely a fact. They're learning that society's history may not be what we've been taught, that there was, in fact, an ancient advanced civilization. This has also become kind of ridiculous to argue with because there are ruins submerged around the world that clearly date back to 10, 11,000 years ago, if not longer, which are very advanced structures, including even things like Stonehenges and Sphinxes and pyramids that have been found under the ocean. The greatest treasure trove of these artifacts was found off the western tip of Cuba by Paul Weinzweig and Paulina Zelitsky, both of whom are members of a company called Advanced Digital Communications. And they were doing treasure hunts for submerged ships that were from the pirate days that would hopefully have gold on them, and they got permission from the Cuban government to do side-scan sonar readings around Cuba. And lo and behold, they found a massive underground complex. I was fortunate enough, after having discussed this on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, to have a woman come forward who had been stationed in Cuba at a base there to tell me that she had spoken to some drunken Navy SEALs in the early 80s who told her, when they were in that intoxicated state, that they were in fact going in and taking multiple artifacts out of what they were calling Atlantis under the sea, and that there were still devices down there that were operational. She, of course, didn't believe him at the time, thought that it was a ridiculous joke, but then when she heard me on the air, she realized something was going on, and she's given her testimony, which I have in, I believe, the first book of the Convergence series called Shift of the Ages. I made some updates to that. And you can find all that in the articles and books section on my website, divinecosmos.com. So, what haven't we been lied to about, really, is the question. Everything that we think we know is different than it really is. And most of us are living in this constrained bubble of reality that is very, very highly distorted from the truth. So what we really want is the truth. And I was on this quest for truth my whole life. And for myself, the most substantial change came in January 1996, which was exactly 15 years after January 1981, when a body of material called the Law of One came through a group of people who'd been working for 20 years to perfect tuned trance telepathy, as they called it, or what now most people are calling channeling. This group worked with UFO information. They were very well read. It was Dr. Don Elkins, an airline pilot and university professor, Carla Rucker, a librarian with a master's degree, and Jim McCarty, who also had a master's degree and came to live with them just a short time before this contact started. Now, I had gotten into researching UFOs and metaphysics much more strongly after the spring of 1993, when I first heard that NASA considered UFOs to be a given at the highest levels, and in fact, much of our technology came from this endowment. That really touched off a quest for me where I was reading so many books I could barely even stop. I went to the library and would just comb through the 000 section, which is all about philosophy. And that's where they would nestle in all the UFO and Bigfoot books and things like that. So I had a good time. I really enjoyed being open to new concepts and new information. Because I'd already had some pretty wild stuff happen. That out of body when I was 7 years old, I'm sorry, when I was 5 years old, really changed me. And then learning about ESP when I was seven, I was able to get psychic things to work. It had never been difficult for me. So, because I'd been practicing my intuition for so long, I was ready for something to happen. I was ready for a change. I had found a book about wanderers, or people who claimed to be of angelic or extraterrestrial origin, in 1995. That's the year I graduated college. I tried to go on into graduate school at a progressive metaphysical university called Naropa Institute in Boulder, Colorado. I was not accepted by them. It could have been my financial status. It could have been the fact that they wanted all their students to meditate 1 hour a day, and I admitted that I did not usually do that. I don't know what really it was, and I probably will never know. But it wasn't for me. That wasn't my path. I needed to spend more time getting to know myself. I'd only been sober for, 3 years by that point, and I still had a lot of growing to do. So after I graduated college, I plunged into the working world, and I knew that it was going to be a bad scene because I really did not have any experience that would allow me to get a job in most places that would give me a competitive edge. About the only thing I could do with a bachelor's degree that might be a little bit better is to try for an internship type position. where the job that I had would help me to get credit for graduate school. That was my original plan. When I went through school, I never intended to stop at a bachelor's degree. I'm one of these kind of people, if you haven't noticed, who would be inclined towards getting a doctorate. It's where my grandfather went, and on my mother's side, both of her parents were teachers. And I believed that if I had a bachelor's degree and then went on to get a master's and a doctorate in psychology, that I could be able to help people and counsel them, which is the main thing I was interested in when I went into college. Of course, once I got into college and then I find out that UFOs are real, it kind of shifted my whole reality around, and I started to spend most of my time studying that and only devoting enough time to schoolwork in order to be able to get through classes with a B average, which wasn't too hard because it was a state school and most people were drunk and high all the time, and I had the benefit of being sober and therefore could remember what I had read about the night before I went to the test and could pass the test. That's usually what I did. I discovered, actually, it was even better to get up before the test that same morning and read everything that the test was going to be about right before I went in. Another key for those of you who are interested in acing high school and college, if you're still in that state of your life, is just take absolutely copious notes when you're in class. Write everything down that the teacher says and maintain eye contact. Most of the people in your classes are losers. And I don't mean that in any type of spiritual judgment. I mean that in terms of their ability to pay attention. Our society has gotten people so easily distracted by quick-cut MTV-style editing and all the whiz-bang of video games and heavy music that they cannot sit there and pay attention and focus on one thing. So what I would recommend if you're a student is to focus on your teacher, whatever class you're in, as if that person is talking to you, as if you're having a conversation with them. And even though they might not be looking at you, maintain eye contact. And I discovered a long time ago that you will become one of the four or five people in the class that the teacher always makes eye contact with. And by maintaining eye contact and only looking down at your paper enough to take notes as things come up, you will very quickly excel in that class. Now, this was all great training for me because ultimately I would end up taking dictation from my own mind, from my own imagination, as most people would think of it. And this is how I was able to get intuitive data to come through. But anyway, you can use any class as a meditation, a focused meditation, where what you're actually doing is focusing your attention on the teacher and on the material. You take copious notes. Don't even worry about trying to stay up all night the night before the test. That's not a good idea. I recommend that you get a good night's sleep before you're going to have a test in a class. And then before the class starts that morning, you want to be reading up on that material. In college, you can do that. I guess in high school, you really can't because you have other classes. But this is a college trick now. You read it up. You go in there. You take the test. And it's like, yeah, I was just looking at this. I was just looking at that. The reason why some people bomb is that they haven't really taken the notes. Now, this applies to people who are not students as well. I think my student mentality has served me well as I've gone on in my life. You want to look at your whole life as if you're a student. And the class is basically the curriculum of love, which is what we're really here for. This is what I started to learn from reading things like The Law of One Material, which I started to talk about beginning in January 1996. Again, I found out in 1995 that I was a wanderer myself. This came about after I graduated from college. I took a job working in the mental health field in terms of going into something where I was in a mental ward. I was not the patient. I was the staff. And again, I know there's a couple people out there that are like, oh, he's repeating the same old story. Thank you for sharing that, but this is important that people hear this because some people have only heard this recording. They haven't ever heard anything else. So just thank you for that input, but we don't need it. I try to use my own experiences to help shed light on things, and that's what we're doing right now. So I was working in this job, and I was not being treated well by the patients or by my staff. Everybody was out to get me. I finally quit after 2.5 weeks, and it was right after that that I found this book that said some people might be wanderers and was talking about the Law of One series. Well, I went to the 12 questions on the back of the book about wanderers, and it identified these various personality characteristics that you would have if you are an ET soul. And in fact, all of these characteristics fit me so well that it was as if this person who wrote this book knew me better than my friends, my family, anybody who actually had ever gotten to know me. Well, who the heck is this guy? It wasn't until a year later that I was able to meet him in person. His name is Dr. Scott Manilker, and it was actually in October of 1996 that I did that. He had a conference in Connecticut, and I was able to show up at that conference and got a session with him, the only time I've ever paid someone for counseling. And he was the first person, Dr. Scott Manilker, to believe in me and tell me that I could actually have a career doing UFOs and metaphysics. I had also wanted to go in that direction when I was still in college, even though another part of me wanted to get a PhD in psychology. It was more that I wanted to be somebody who could have the PhD for name-dropping and legitimacy in that sense, but then would basically go into the alternative world anyway. That had been my plan, and then when I tried to get this job in the mental ward and it didn't work out, I felt my aspirations for graduate school collapsing, and I'm wondering, well, what in the world am I going to do that's actually going to give me a stable income so I can function above a poverty level? I'd already gone through a great deal of poverty in my family. My mother made barely enough money to avoid us being qualifying for the EOP program, Equal Opportunity Program, which is basically a incentive program for kids in the ghetto to be able to go to college and get paid a monthly stipend in order to stay in school. Unfortunately, a lot of those kids did end up using the stipend to buy drugs and alcohol, and a lot of them did not graduate, but the program did support people and gave them opportunities that might not otherwise have had them. So the reason why I'm saying all this is that I've realized that a lot of you people are young people, and I always tend to talk from a more adult perspective in terms of being 35 years old and having worked as a professional for 10 years now. It's easy to talk from that level and not reach you at the level that you're at. I would say more than 50% of the people hearing me are in that younger age group now. So I want to talk to you about things like going to school, staying in school, having jobs that don't seem to pay anything, feeling like you're kind of spinning your wheels, not knowing what you really want to do with your life, and wondering what's it all about. Well, Manilker's book showed me that there are people that have come here to this planet calling themselves wanderers. Well, they don't call themselves wanderers, but he does. And most of them don't even know who they are. But in fact, they are part of this amazing story that is going on behind the scenes. It's a story that involves untold numbers of civilized planets like the Earth scattered throughout the whole entire galaxy. The galaxy itself, this is getting back to the Law of One material that Dr. Scott Manilker was writing about in this book From Elsewhere, as he called it, about wanderers. And then I started to read the source material in January 96 after finding his book in November 95. This Law of One material describes that the galaxy itself is an intelligent super creator. It's alive. It's got a consciousness. The Earth obviously has a consciousness. The Sun has a consciousness. And the level of consciousness we're talking about here is vastly more than what we have. It's very ignorant and stupid for us to think that we are the sum total of what there is to be alive and conscious in the universe. I think that's very effectively been proven by a variety of scientific experiments, and that's why I'm putting so much effort into getting this film launched, Convergence of the Movie, which delves into these subjects and talks about the true essence of what it means to be alive and conscious on Earth. This is a film that's going to use a Da Vinci Code type of mystery thriller plot and weaving that together with hardcore scientific information that I've dug up that very few other people have ever seen in one place. In fact, it's never been put together in one place before. So it's like the material that was in What the Bleep, but actually much more hard-hitting, much more eye-opening, much more powerful. And I am very pleased to report that our lawyer, who is also a script doctor for the film, has now said that the version of the script that I've written most recently is quote-unquote very good. Now, this same guy is the guy that was always telling us before, it's not good enough, you have to rewrite it, you have to start over. And this got very, very maddening, as I'm sure you can imagine. We also brought in Catherine Ann Jones, who's the author of a book called The Way of Story. And she wrote this wonderful book about the metaphysical aspect of screenwriting and showing that you could get a film where you don't have to have just guns going off and a lot of physical action in order to create drive and momentum in character development. You can have your character development come from the internal spiritual conflict that people go through rather than external conflict of being in physical jeopardy. Now, of course, the genre we're writing in, the thriller genre, does require physical jeopardy. I can honestly say that I have the equivalent of a film degree now because I've studied with two different film professors, Danielle Suisa and Ariel Levy. Danielle has taught at USC and UCLA and the LA Film School. Ariel Levy's actually head of production at the LA Film School. They ran me through the ringer in terms of learning all the various things about screenwriting, and I've also been through all of the major books that there are to read about screenwriting. Probably a total of 14 now that I've been through. Of course, Catherine Ann Jones, the woman who we actually hired to do the rewrite on our script, her book, The Way of Story, is a required course curriculum reading material at NYU Film School for all people who have to learn screenwriting. So getting through this film thing, which has been now 4 years of my life as of January, has been like getting another degree in and of itself. With my partner, Billy Blake, he's a third-generation Hollywood person. His father and his grandfather were in Hollywood ever since it started with silent movies. And he brings to the table a lot that I wouldn't have known otherwise, including how to get a film made at a lower budget level. So I'm an executive producer. That's the guy that basically shakes hands with the money and gets the investments lined up and manages the rest of the project in order to ensure that everything gets done, people get paid, and that the jobs are filled, and essentially directs the whole thing. So not only am I the executive producer, I'm also the creative director, the research director. The whole entire thing so far has really been my work. That's going to change once we bring in a director and talent, of course, acting talent. And director of photography, or the DP, is also a really important element to how the film is going to look and feel when we get it out there. But this is like another life for me that I only started 4 years ago. And before that, I was really focused on this career that I have online as a spiritual teacher and a metaphysical personality that has been on the radio numerous times. I've spoken and toured all around the world about these subjects. And I'm trying to find ways to break down the conventional systems of thought that have locked us up in the media in this sort of virtual handcuffing where we're not even able to think for ourselves and we're being stage managed in terms of what to believe and what we think is true. I've had it with that stuff. I'm not going to put up with anyone trying to define my reality to me. I am very clear that I want to know the truth. I'm very clear that I will go to any extreme to seek the truth, and that I am willing to sacrifice my time and my energy in that process. And I think you're also that person, or else you wouldn't be listening right now. So I can look at my life, and this is what I recommend everybody do, is look at your whole life from a vantage point where here you are in the present, but all the experiences you have throughout your life are available to you. In fact, in the Law of One Material, which again is my philosophical base, it says that there's only two things you can do that will create an exponential increase in your spiritual growth, which is what we're all here for, is to grow spiritually. Only two things. The first thing is to seek the love in this moment. Now, you probably feel pretty good while you're listening to me talk. I know a lot of people love my audio blogs. That's fine and good. You can seek the love right now. You can have a nice cosmic buzz from listening to me talk. But what about the times when you're sitting there in class and you're bored out of your mind? The professor is just totally dry, or your teacher is totally dry. Or what about you sitting at a job and you know that you're there because you need to have the money or else you wouldn't be able to survive, but you don't feel as if your job is doing anything for you? What about somebody who has really bad health and is going through a lot of turbulence in terms of whether you're even going to be able to afford the right health care? You know, there's any number of things that you could be going through that would pull you out of the present. Another thing is, of course, a dysfunctional relationship. You could have people in your life who are treating you badly, disrespectfully in some way. And most of us who are wanderers, meaning that you are this sleeping ET soul, you're not aware that you are this person, but yet you are. You might very well be inclined to try to always love, to try to always be supportive and positive towards others, even when they're manipulative and controlling towards you. And this is naivete. It's what happens when you have a really open heart, but you haven't so much developed the discernment of the higher chakras from the fifth on upwards. That's perfectly fine. I do try to coach wanderers to get out of just being in the heart center, because the heart center is a great place to be and you want to keep it open, but it's not the end of the journey. Having an open heart and only doing the things that make you feel like you're having joy and fun isn't the end. There's also honor. Honor is a fifth density principle. It's a throat chakra principle. It's where you start to communicate. It's where you start to direct your will. And honor is really about doing something that you don't really want to do, but you do it anyway because it's right for a greater good. It's right for a greater number of people. So if your whole purpose to be on the earth right now is a spiritual purpose, and you're in a class, rather than zone out and stare at the wall, the best thing you can do in that class in that moment is support the teacher. Support that person that's trying to give you that lesson. Look them in the eye. Enjoy the fact that you're there. Make yourself known to that teacher and write down what they say. Take it seriously. Because why would you want to go through your life not being engaged in your life? Why would you want to be a sleeper? Why would you want to sit on the outside and look in and just kind of move through life making an outline of the truth but not actually defining the truth? I would recommend diving in, grabbing life by the horns, and starting to really get your own potential realized. If your potential is that you're in school as a student, then maximize your potential. Be a great student. Be an amazing scholar of what you're doing. If you're in a job, then you have more than one person. It's not like being in class where you really do need to focus your attention on that teacher. In a job, you're there to help other people. Almost every job involves working with people in some capacity. And this can be the lowliest thing. It could be you out there literally sweeping a broom on the street. It could be you working in Dunkin' Donuts or Arby's or some sort of fast food restaurant where basically people are coming up to you and they're ordering food that's probably going to kill them. And even in that circumstance, the fact of the matter is that you are here on the earth in the middle of a vast spiritual illusion. The illusion is that we are separate people. We're not. There's only one of us here. There's one infinite creator that voluntarily decided to separate itself into illusory fragments. These are not real fragments. There is only one of us here. There is only one infinite creator. That's why you have what appears to be a hierarchical organization of consciousness, including the galaxy being conscious, including multiple sentient planets with people like us on those planets in this galaxy and other galaxies. That's why you have people visiting us now. I learned about being a wanderer, learned about the idea that there could be people on many, many different worlds in this galaxy, and many of those worlds are a lot more evolved than we are on the Earth. Let's be honest. This particular planet is an experiment that, from some people's perspective, could be seen to have been a big upset. Typically, what happens, according to the Law of One series, is that planets are moved through evolution on a mass scale. There are cycles that happen during which time the actual frequency of the planet shifts, and there's a transmutation that occurs. This means that the people on the planet actually upgrade to a higher dimension. It's called ascension. It's a process by which you actually transmute your physical body and become an ascended being. When you're an ascended being, you have a light body. You have vastly more capability than you do as a physical body. And you also have much more ability to help others. You could do things that would be considered complete miracles, teleporting people from one place to another, levitating yourself, levitating objects, reading other people's minds, zipping through time, fast-forwarding and rewinding it. The potentials are practically limitless when you move into an ascended state. And this is where we're going. So again, if you're working some lame job and you want to see your way beyond it, the point is not so much right now that you try to have all the physical success that you're looking for. You can go in that direction if you want to, but let's be clear that there is a timeline that the galaxy sets up for planets to go through this evolutionary process. And when it reaches the end of the timeline, your planet pops over into a higher dimension, whether you're ready or not. And I absolutely do believe that that time is the end of 2012. There have been a lot of dates that have been false alarms. And of course, I keep on having a small percentage of the audience that zings me and says, oh, nothing's going to happen in 2012, and I don't know why you keep talking about this. But the fact of the matter is, I have been shown over the years from my own source so many accurate examples of prophecy, which you can hear about in many other shows that we've done. Why would I ever want to doubt that one very important aspect of the total prophecy would be wrong when everything else has been right? There is a lot of corroborating testimony from witnesses showing that, in fact, our governments do know that there is some huge event happening in 2012, and they're preparing for it. They're preparing for it in a variety of ways, including getting themselves off the planet before it ever happens. Now, I don't see this as a disaster, because I believe that the people who look at it as a disaster are only seeing half of the story. It is true, let's make no mistake, it is true that the Earth is going through a great deal of cataclysmic activity. It is also true that the Earth will probably have a pole shift. And a pole shift would have had the effect, if we were still here in physical form, of pretty much wiping out life on Earth as we know it. However, the Law of One series, for what it's worth, says there is no more Earth changes after 2012. That they're over. And that there will probably be a 22-degree pole shift. I think that what actually causes the pole shift is a geometric shift in the Earth's grid. Now, if you go through my books, you can see about this. There's a whole extra branch of science that we have been kept from. It gets into sacred geometry. The idea is that the energy of the universe is like a fluid. And when you vibrate fluid, you get geometry. If you do the sound frequencies of the white keys of the piano, those are called diatonic frequencies. When you vibrate a fluid with those frequencies, you get three-dimensional shapes that show up as stress patterns in the water. If you have dust in the water, the dust will naturally arrange itself into those stress patterns. And this has been done by Dr. Hans Jenny, spelled J-E-N-N-Y. So, I've talked about this many times, and the fact is this geometric law actually builds physical matter, and it is harmonically affecting much larger objects, including planets. So even on the level of a planet, you have geometric lines of force, which are not hidden at all. If you look at what's really going on with the expansion of the Earth, there was a guy named Dr. Athelstan Spilhouse, and I interviewed one of his colleagues, Dr. Hanshao Liu, over the email, and his last name is spelled L-I-U, first name H-A-N-S-H-O-U. And he confirmed, Dr. Liu confirmed to me in an email that he and Dr. Spilhouse had discovered that as you model the expansion of the Earth from the original supercontinent Pangaea, it goes through a series of geometric phases of expansion, beginning with a tetrahedron, moving into what's called a cube octahedron, and now in its current configuration, it's an icosadodecahedron. These shapes are something you really have to see pictures of, or else it's not going to make a lot of sense to you, but suffice it to say that they're increasingly complex shapes as you go up. So the actual arrangement of the continents and the undersea volcanic ridges fits this geometric pattern very nicely. And it's just something that you don't really think about because it's not being told to you in the media. You don't realize, for example, that the reason why the continents have grown further and further apart is that the Earth is expanding from within along these C4 spreading lines. And so the crust of the Earth is the original surface. The original surface of the Earth did not have big oceans at all. It was more like what we might see on Mercury. And then as the Earth kept expanding, it moved farther and farther away from the Sun, got larger and larger in size. The thick crust became thinner, and at these breakpoints where new material was spilling out in the form of lava from within, the lava would get cooled down by the oceans, and the oceans grew into these widening cracks. So this is what's happening. The Earth is actually like an organism. It is an organism, and it's growing. It's getting larger in size. And the atmosphere is going to keep getting thicker and thicker. That's why we're seeing more and more weathers. There's actually greater numbers of clouds coming in because we're moving into a new position in the solar system where eventually the Earth will become like a gas planet. It's a long ways away from now, but if you actually look at Jupiter and Saturn, they have rocky cores in their center that are about the size of the Earth, and you have all this atmosphere that showed up over that. So the physical size of the Earth doesn't get probably a whole lot larger than it is now. And then as the Earth keeps expanding, it's going to be more and more in the atmosphere than in the physical crust and the interior that we've been seeing expand up until now. So also in the Law of One series, we learn that these other planets are not uninhabited, that on the higher planes, they very much have whole worlds of people like us living there. In fact, there is a government, if you will, in the higher planes, and the local management center is in the rings of Saturn, supposedly. It's called the Council of Saturn. And these guys are the ones that pass off on the so-called management and transfer of planetary populations. Now, as I said before, you have a lot of administration happening in the universe. We live in a highly orchestrated reality. Nothing happens by accident or chance. It's actually very much directed by our own spiritual process. The negative elite on the planet are not our enemy. They are put here to show a mirror to ourselves of how we have been falling off and not being in true alignment with our highest purpose and potential. So that's an important point. That's why I had a dream just the other day saying, don't hate on McCain and Palin. We're moving into a great stage here. This presidential election will determine who holds office for the last 4 years prior to the 2012 event itself. The inauguration of the president who wins the last election won't be until 2013. So the election itself of 2012 isn't until November. And by then, we will have had so many changes that you could hardly imagine. Again, I don't see a pole shift affecting anybody on Earth. I see a transmutation of the people on the Earth, which is actually very straightforward. This geometric grid has places where there are lines crossing over. They're called nexus points or nodes. And those nodes at certain times will allow there to be a warping. And the Bermuda Triangle is one of the most common places, but in fact, Ivan Sanderson studied the grid and found while he was looking for where there were the most numbers of ships and planes disappearing, and he plotted it all out on a global map and got it down to 12 regions. It turns out those 12 regions were all equally distant from each other, and he called them the 12 devil's graveyards around the world. These 12 spots, if you connect them together, form the geometry known as the icosahedron. And that's one of the two geometries that our Earth is being affected by now. So we already know that ships have gone through the Bermuda Triangle and they come out with nobody on the ship, but the ship is still there. We've seen planes that have completely disappeared as they've flown through, and there's no evidence of flotsam or oil slicks on the water. None of the things that would show you that the plane had crashed. So we've seen transmutation. Unfortunately, it's a technology that should be available to everyone. One of the things we learn from multiple insider witnesses and from esoteric material like this Law of One series is that stargates are real. Stargates actually do exist. There have been channels set up from various planets. In fact, all the planets have had in our galaxy a vast stargate network built that interconnect all of them. And the end of the movie Contact shows you that very clearly. And that's a pretty good description of what the ancient systems work like, where you actually do end up flying through like a wormhole, and it does have this winding, violent, whipsawing movement as you go through it. It's actually quite jarring, and it's also considered dangerous. If you're not really well equipped to handle it, it can make you go crazy. So it's not very safe, actually. But that's also because we're so unevolved compared to where most of these planets are. Most people would be much more prepared to go through the Stargate system and not have it affect them than we are. So where is all this going? I've been talking about a lot of different subjects, and you're probably wondering, is there a point to all this? Well, there is. The point is that we were all put together from different planets of people who failed. That's what happened on our planet. That's our history. You have a variety of planets like the Earth where they have three cycles to ascend, three cycles to go from third density, which is where you're choosing between loving other people or controlling other people, to fourth density. You can go fourth density negative, which means that you're totally devoted to controlling people, 95%. Or you go fourth density positive, which means you're 51% focused on loving people rather than manipulating them. That's all you have to be. You can still be 49% negative and be good to go for this process. So I encourage you not to get wound up about what might happen to you in 2012 or anything like that, because if you are focused just a little bit more on serving and helping other people rather than manipulating and controlling them, you are good to go for this process and you do not need to be concerned about it. Well, I'm going to allow this to be the end of part one, so you can fit this on one CD if you're putting it on CDs, and we will pick up again with part two.